Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Patience.
Afternoon, Zama. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Lovely, lovely. Great to speak to you this afternoon. Now, we are continuing to talk about integrating faith into one's career. And, you know, in a world that often prizes winning at all costs, what does it look like to stand firm in our convictions? From cutting corners to a little white lie for the sake of a sale, you know, the secular workplace is a minefield of ethical dilemmas. And today, I want to discuss how to navigate the gray area of business with clarity of the gospel. We're asking ourselves hard questions. What do you do when your faith and your firm's bottom line are at odds? Patience, what are the most common ethical dilemmas that Christians face in today's secular workspaces?
Good afternoon to all the listeners this afternoon. So there's a number of dilemmas that Christians face in today's secular world. I'm just going to name a few of them. So there's things like manipulating numbers in order to meet targets. There's things like hiding compliance risks. There's unfair hiring or favoritism. There's participating in gossip and political sabotage. There's withholding truth from clients, you know, don't tell them this, you know, hiding things. Mm. Then there's something really sensitive, sexual harassment, which can be masked as humor. And then there's also even affairs that will be happening within departments between managers and subordinates. And all these things are really framed as sin in the workplace, you know, especially in a secular workplace. They are framed as just pressure or nothing at all, things that we don't talk about. And when we look at the Bible, you know, we'll see that Daniel, he was experiencing that type of pressure as well. And in Daniel 1 verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies. So integrity begins as an internal decision. No one can tell you that you have to be ethical and upright. You have to start it as yourself. And then from an HR insight point of view, ethical fading shows how repeated small compromises become normalized. So it's always small things. It starts very small and then it grows and grows. And in order to overcome these things, remember yesterday we spoke about when you know whose you are, when you know who you are in the Lord, and you know that I am a daughter of the Creator, I am the son of the Creator, I am the daughter of the King, then you will then know how to advance and how to react, because you decide already that because I belong to a King, I cannot participate in or accept certain behaviors. Mm. And then abiding daily, distance from Christ weakens moral courage. So when you enter into that office, when you switch on that laptop, when you switch on your computer, don't now say, oh, I'm no longer an Adventist. I'm no longer a Christian. Mm. Even there, when you are there, abide daily. Even if it's not necessarily opening the Bible and reading it, have a prayer. You know, in Pathfinders, you have the saying, keep a song in your heart. Mm. Keep a song in your heart, because that is abiding daily. And then build clear boundaries with people. Because you're coming from different backgrounds, people have been raised differently. So you have to build clear boundaries and say, you know what? This is as far as I can go. Because, you know, sometimes in the workplace, there's things like networking events. Mm. And if you don't attend those, it might be to your detriment. Mm. And you'll find that those events are happening on a Friday evening. They're happening on a Sabbath. They're happening during times when you're not supposed to be at those places. There's drinking that's happening there. There's a lot of things that are happening there. So you need to be able to have clear boundaries, remembering whose you are and who you are. And then practice faithfulness in small matters by removing small compromises. And this one, this last one that I want to say, Zama, before we move, is especially to women. Mm. Women, just guard your proximity. A lot of times in the workplace, women are very vulnerable in the workplace. Mm. So when you find yourself being called for one-on-one meetings every now and again, having meetings that are in secrecy. Someone is making promises to you in secrecy. Please, please notify someone. HR is there. Someone who is trusted. Even if you can go outside of your workplace, because maybe your workplace is compromised, but avoid being in a situation that results in you getting into trouble. Thank you.
Beautiful one. That's a lovely advice. Now, how should one handle a situation where the boss asks them something to do something that compromises their integrity? Should they say, no, sorry, I'm not going to do that. Forget it.
Yeah, so, you know, in the OSH Act, which is the Occupational Health and Safety Act, it says that an employee can refuse to do something if that thing is illegal. So if they ask you to, let's say they ask you to do electrical work, meanwhile, you're not a qualified electrician, you are just someone who has no idea what red, blue, whatever earthing means. And then they ask you to do that, and then you do it, and the building burns up or something, you're the one who's going to also end up in trouble with that.
And
you have a refusal to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I cannot do it because I'm not qualified. So I'm not legally allowed to do it. So as Christians, we ought to obey God rather than men. God is our ultimate authority. And we cannot do things that are opposite to what God says in the Word. So authority pressure is one of the strongest predictors of unethical behavior. So some companies, they are unethical like that. However, you still have a right to say no. And most misconduct happens because employees fear consequences. You're so scared to lose your job. So when you find yourself in that position where you have been asked to do something that is not ethically correct, that is even illegal, first of all, examine your heart and understand, what am I doing? What is the motive behind my saying no? What am I doing? Is it because I just don't want to do it? Or is it because that this thing is actually wrong? Pray before responding. Saints, I cannot say that enough. Every single thing that we do, it has to start and end, and in between have prayer in it. And then clarify the request, so that you're not unclear, because what organizations are very clever in doing is to say, no, that's not what we said. We had asked you to do A, B, C, D, now you're talking G, H, I know. So you need to clarify that request and shine light on any ambiguity, so that when you are responding, you're responding from a point of clarity. And then if possible, you can offer ethical alternatives and then speak with meek. Don't shout and say, I will never do it. I'm not going to do it. Just speak with meekness and say, however, the law says, however, I cannot do that. And have your facts with you. And prepare for consequence without panic. Because remember when Daniel came up and he says, but if not, similar with the Hebrew boys, but if not. But you're not panicking, because you know that if you are standing in God's word and you're doing something that God has actually purposed for you to do, then you are not going to be burnt by that fire. You are not going to be eaten by those lions. You are going to come out victorious. So trust in the provision of the Lord and seek first the kingdom of God.
I like what you are saying, which is not easy, that be prepared for the consequences. That's not an easy one, because consequences are that you could even lose your job, by the way. So one has got to even think that far. My. Yep. How can we advocate for biblical values like justice, like honesty, like transparency, without sounding preachy or judgmental?
That's a very good one, Zaba, because you don't want people, whenever they see you, they're like, oh, here she comes again. She's coming to bless us with the Bible, you know, here she comes again. But we always have to realize that moral authority increases when humility and consistency precede correction. So don't just talk about it. Be about it. So do you understand what I'm saying? So don't just talk and say, no, do this. No, you must do this. What you're doing is wrong. Be that example. So that when you do talk, people will be like, oh, you know what? This lady, this brother, this sister, they are that. They're not just talking from nowhere. They are that. They are living that. So when you're talking about humility, and when you're going to someone in humility, you must walk humbly as a start before you speak boldly. You can't just be going there and you're the one who's forever shouting at people and doing things and then telling people, no, don't shout at people. That's not nice. You can't do that. And then also another fact that you can use practically is leading with data and risk awareness, not condemnation. So bring data and create a risk awareness and say, if this happens, this is what the outcome is going to be. Not to just say, oh, it's the end of you, you're just going to be over, whatever. No, give data and lead with risk awareness. And pray for those you disagree with. Remember yesterday we were talking about love your enemies. Pray for your enemies. Pray for those people that you disagree with. Because at the end of the day, your enemies were created by God too, just like you. And maybe they are in need of a prayer, just like you. And then let your conduct speak. I cannot overemphasize that enough. You know, when someone says, I never lie, I never make a mistake, I never do this, usually that person is the president of doing all those things that they do. So you have to make sure that your light so shines before men that even before you open your mouth, they can see and they can already feel convicted sometimes and say, you know what, maybe I've made a mistake. So influence without humility becomes self-righteousness and easily annoying. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to chase people from the gospel. You want to bring them closer.
Mm. You want to bring them closer. Now, how can we then, patience, balance, being as wise as serpents while remaining innocent as doves in a very competitive, industry?
That's also another tough one. But I look to Paul because there was that time in Acts 22 when they were about to flog him and do all the things that they wanted to do to him. And then he said to them, is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned? He just stopped them with lawful strategy. So you need to have lawful strategy. You need to have an element of strategy in the thing that you're doing. So when we're thinking serpent, we're thinking strategy, not in a bad way, but strategy in a good way, where you can ask God for discernment. You ask God for discernment. What is happening here? How do I need to speak to address this? Do I need to speak aggressively? Do I need to speak from a place of hurt and anger? No, I don't. I need to speak in a way that makes sense, in a way that someone is going to understand and hear. So utilize that wisdom that comes from the Lord and refuse to be manipulated. There's a lot of manipulation that happens in the workplace where you will start thinking that you're the one who's the problem here. So refuse to be manipulated. And how do you do that? Daily abiding in the Lord. And you will realize that here, I'm being taken for a ride here. Here, I'm being gaslit here. Here, I'm being made to do something that I'm not supposed to be doing. And then document and protect your integrity. As an HR person, a lot of employees get taken for disciplinary hearings. And when they go for those disciplinary hearings, they just go and they're like, oh, whatever happens, happens. No, don't leave things to chance. Document and protect your integrity. Every conversation that you have, especially when you're dealing with people that are not at the same ethical level as you, document it and protect your integrity. Do not respond the same way that they've responded to you or they've treated you. Do not give bad for bad. Respond in a way that is gentle so that when you are now presenting, you're saying, this person shouted at me, but this is the way that I responded. So remember, saints, document your integrity, and then resist retaliation. When someone comes to you trying to do something to you, do not fight back. Do not fight back with your hands. Do not fight back with mouth. Fight back with your documentation. Fight back with your facts. Fight back with your figures. Fight back with your prayer. That is the way that you can do it.
Lovely. Now, in terms of standing up for my beliefs in the workplaces, is it always necessary to fight all the battles, or can I choose my battles? You know the statement that says choose your battles. Because if I have to fight everything that's against me, even if it risks the job security, how do I do that?
So choosing your battles is the most important thing. You don't fight everything. Not every disagreement requires defiance. Mm. Not every inconvenience is persecution, because now you'll be, you know, especially when you're on high alert, every single thing now becomes, oh, this is persecution. Oh, this person is doing this. Oh, they looked at me like this. Oh, they didn't greet me. No, not everything requires a response. But there are moments when silence becomes participation. All wrong needs to succeed is for a few good men to be quiet, isn't it? And we know that. Mm. So the question shouldn't be about, will this cost me my job? The question is the question of eternity. If I comply, what will it cost my soul? Will I be able to look at myself in the mirror tomorrow? Will I be able to look at my children, if you have children, and tell them, you know, this is what happened, or maybe they find out, will I be able to stand for this decision? So what you need to do then is you need to acknowledge God's power. You need to accept possible loss, because there is a possibility of loss. It's not just to be sweet and shiny. You're going to speak up, everything is going to be made right. No, there's good, the devil is a, he's there plundering. And we are in the great controversy. We know that.
Yep.
So we know that there's a risk that things might not go your way. But you know that as long as you are doing this, not from a point of ego, not from a point of self, not from a point of, yeah, no, I want to get this person because they did A, B, C, D to me. But from a point of, this thing is inherently wrong. This thing is bad. God is going to be there for you. And whatever it is, even if you lose that job, something bigger is going to come. How many times have we read about that in the Bible, where someone gets dropped off from another place and then guess what? They're the next one who's wearing these garments. You know, so you need to be able to understand what is the motive of you standing up to oppose it. And in order for you to do it properly, you need to know, if the action is illegal or deceptive, stand up against it. If it exploits or harms others, stand up against it. If it violates a clear command of God, stand up against it. Mm. And continue to harden your conscience. If you just continue to say, oh, you can see they're busy messing up the books and there's fraud, you're in the finance department, there's a lot of negligence and fraud that's taking place and you're keeping quiet. And you're probably the one who even has to sign off those figures. If you don't stand up, someone else is going to stand up and you're going to take the fall. Mm. You understand?
My goodness. Yeah, it's rough, man. It's rough out there. Sometimes you wish that there were companies that were just solely Adventist so that you don't have to go through all of this. But it's not the reality. Now, apart from standing up, you know, there's also the role of prayer, the culture of prayer. How does that role or culture of prayer, you know, work when we approach business decisions, client relationships, manager-employee relationship and colleagues?
So before we even go into a Christian context, let's look at circular leadership itself. You'll hear many executives practice meditation. They practice mindfulness, reflective journaling, this, that, and the other. All these other things of the world, because it helps them in one way or another. But guess what? You now have a tool that is the most effective of them all. You have prayer. You pray without ceasing. The same way that an executive would then meditate before they make a decision, you do your prayer before you make a decision, because it will give you clarity. It will give you calm. It will regulate your emotions. It will make you to start thinking differently about the way that you had initially approached you. So imagine you receive an email, and not very, you know, one of those emails, I don't know if you know this, but in the workplace, there's some emails that come and they start off with fighting words, you know, and you can see copied in those emails are so many people that you would rather not have copied in those emails, that you would rather not see them. So instead of you looking at that email, and starting off as well, and then saying, How can this person do this? You know, lifting up your sleeves and saying, how does this person talk to me like this? No, no, no. You don't do that. Pray about it. Take some time. And when you pray, remember, even when you're praying at your own house, you don't just pray and you stand up. You pray and you listen, you wait. That is the guidance that we know that we have as Adventists. You pray, you listen, you wait. So you pray, you listen, you wait. If after that prayer, listening and waiting, you still send fiery email, then we just need to all just pray for you in a corporate type of prayer. But pray and wait so that you do not just respond without thinking. You shouldn't be impulsive. Prayer takes away that impulsivity. It takes, because it's not every profitable deal that goes through in that way, you know. And prayer purifies your motive.
Yeah.
Is it driven by fear? Is it driven by ego? Is it driven by greed? Because a lot of times in the workplace, these three things are the things that are driving us. We are fearful because we're afraid of losing our job, our incomes. We have egos because I want to be the number one. I want to be the CEO. I want to be the top. We are greedy because I don't want to be sharing the spotlight with so-and-so. So you need to be able to understand, why am I feeling a certain way about someone or something or a situation that is taking place? Is it fear? Am I scared I'm going to lose my job? Ego, am I scared that, do I feel like I'm being disrespected? They're looking down on me right now. Am I greedy because I need to be the only one getting a promotion? Everyone else cannot be getting a promotion or an increase. It must just be me. So you need to look at, what is my motive? And then it regulates, prayer also regulates the tone of conflict. Colossians verse 6, let your speech always be with grace. So those same lips that pray cannot be the same lips that they say other things that are igniting conflict, that are causing the fire to conflict, because you need to have that speech with grace. And then it reframes people. Staff become image bearers, not headcount. So you start looking at people as people, not just a number, because you're seeing that, you know what? God made that person too. God, that person is also praying to God. That person also has a family. You start making decisions in a different way because you're realizing that we are all here. We're all God's children. He loves us. And he's trying to see each and every single one of us. And then you stop being so ambitious. You stop being so about, I need to be this great thing. It becomes more around stewardship rather than an identity of growing in a particular position. So I just want to close this one with Colossians 2, verses 6 to 7. As you therefore have received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk in him, rooted, not on the corner, not on the edge, not standing, rooted, you are deep in, and built up in him, and established in faith. Stay in there.
Yeah.
Stay in there. Yeah, that's my final words.
Beautiful. I just wanted, because I just thought of an advice that I can give to the listeners, but maybe it's not right. You can tell me. Because, you know, I could be wrong. because I'm thinking, man, what if you then threaten them, but with a holy threat.
Mm-mm.
You know, you ask them a question. Do you know who I am?
Zaba, if you're trying to get into a disciplinary process or a grievance procedure, then definitely you can utilize threats. But as long as you're a child of God and you're trying to live the right way, threats are not your thing.
But you see, that's why I said it's a holy threat, because after asking them, do you know who I am? You say, I'm the child of the Most High.
No. They must see that. They're going to see that for themselves.
Okay.
So just like when the Hebrew boys went into the fire, did they say, do you know who we are? Do you know who we belong to? Mm-hmm. You will see. Wasn't it the king himself who said, I see a fourth man in the fire, and it looks like the Son of God, the Son of Man. So They must see it for themselves. Not for you. It's not for you to come with your threats. Please don't. Please.
Oh, no, no. Then, please. Then let me withdraw that advice.
Please, please, please withdraw it immediately. Thank you. Please.
Thank you so much, patience.
You're welcome.
Lovely. Have a good one. Talk to you tomorrow again, same time and same place.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.